And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. And so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Alright, so lads, two huge games to look forward to. Just a little bit of news we will cover before we get into the two All-Ireland semi-finals, and that is that Eddie Brennan has stood down from his position as Laois manager. He had a 2-year deal and didn't take the option of the third year. Obviously a huge disappointment in Laois for Eddie to step down. Like, I mean, he did an absolutely brilliant job with them. Beating Dublin was the big one, performing really well against Tipperary, and, you know, arguably should have beaten Clare over in Nolan Park this year. So definitely when he took over Laois just about avoided relegation from the Joe McDonagh Cup. They lost by 10 points to both Kerry and Carlow. So that kind of improvement in 2 years just kind of, you know, it kind of highlights the loss and the job that Eddie, and it has to be said, Tommy Fitzgerald as well, and Niall Corcoran too, who just did an absolutely fantastic job with the Laois team. By all accounts, Eddie, and he was completely on the record after the Clare game in his interview, saying that he wanted more backing. He wanted more financial backing. And it was kind of like a plea to the Laois County Board to maybe back the team a little bit more. By all accounts, in the meeting, he wasn't promised the backing that he wanted. And, you know, he left at that stage. There's no point in completely ignoring the role that the off-the-record chat had. I'm sure that affected his negotiating power potentially with the county board, but who knows? So you're only getting into speculation at that stage. Maybe it didn't help. Maybe Eddie would have left anyway. Maybe he would have stayed. We'll never know, Cheddar. But I suppose the point here is that, you know, Eddie was a very ambitious manager and he wanted more financial backing. And, you know, from a Laois County Board perspective, they backed the Laois hurlers this year more than the footballers financially. And it's a small county and doesn't have a huge finances to be able to give. And Eddie's hugely ambitious and wants to catch up on the Limericks and the Tipperaries and these teams with huge backroom teams. And it's a very, very difficult one for an ambitious manager and for a county board with limited funds.
Yeah, Woody, I was afraid you were going to bring up that today. All right. Obviously we're on the show and we've got to discuss these things as well. Just before I sort of give some comments, I'm not privy to the goes on in Laois hurling. When you step away as a manager, you step away and you stop, you don't be interfering in that. I'm probably not going to comment a whole lot on it. There's been, I'm not going to add any more fuel to that fire, Woolly. But look, you've raised a couple of little points there. First of all, Eddie and Niall and Tommy done a great job the last couple of years, and certainly have Laois heading in the right direction. You talk about Eddie being ambitious. Look, every manager should be ambitious. That's not a prerequisite. There are prerequisites for managers. You shouldn't be getting them if you're not. But equally, everybody should be ambitious. County boards, supporters, and particularly the team. There's no point in you saying to the team, and bear in mind, you're going to look for a manager. And the first thing as a manager that you will look at before you get involved at all is there actually an ambition internally within this entity itself, whether it be the team or the county board or the club management or whatever it is. So that should be there. But the next piece is the most important piece. And I suppose it is, well, if there is ambition there, how can we serve that ambition and get the best out of ourselves? And that's the piece, that seems to have fell down here a little bit. And unfortunately, a lot of that is dictated by money. It's very naive to say that, it's a voluntary organization and all of those things. Because in reality, if you're talking about ambition, you are talking about high performance. If you were talking about high performance, you were talking about high performance from absolutely everybody, including your logistics person in your team, including your high county board, including your supporters. Absolutely everything needs to have a culture of high performance about that. And if we just drill down to that for a second, there are some critical people here. Clearly, it's about hurling and your coaches and all that are crucial to you. But there are also critical backroom people here, if they're physios, if they are a nutritionist, your doctor, your medical people, your strength and conditioning person. And I've said this a number of times before on the show, Uli, these things don't work on their own. You know this, you know, we all know this, but sometimes it needs to get said. All these are a cog in a bigger wheel. And when you see the top teams performing, that's what you see. I mean, there was a famous picture of the Tipperary management team on one of the papers, one of the time, I think it was 30 or 31 or 32 in it. I would absolutely say every one of them had a role in that team, the one in All-Ireland. And it's not, you don't need 30 people. You don't need 40 people. It's not that, but you do need key people. But the point I wanted to make is this. Those key people are professional people. And there's no point in you talking about high performance unless you're going to bring in the very, very best people. And generally speaking, those professional people make their living between 6 and 8 or 9 in the evening time. You take a physiotherapist in private practice. Fine if he's working in a hospital or something like that. He might have different hours. But most of his time is going to be taken up in sessions with people, we'll say from 6 to 9 in the evening, because that's when people are off. So you are now saying to him, well, look, I want you to come in as a physiotherapist with Leash Hurling or with Kilkenny Hurling, or it doesn't make a difference who it's with. But I need to reimburse you for the money that you're going to lose. And that's just one person. It's obviously the easy one for me to explain. So that then brings you to a different issue. Do we have the finance to be able to support that? And that's where the real issue is. And look, some counties are just generally in a poor situation. I'm talking about my own county, Leash, here is the one I know most about. But you could apply this to an awful lot of the hurling counties that are maybe at the mid-tier at the minute or even at the lower. There's no big industry in the county that you can say, you can go into them and you can say, will you sponsor our team to the tune of $1 million or something like that, similar to AIG or something like that. We don't have that. So we're not able to do that. But I think the crucial thing in all of this is that may not be there, but is everything else explored here? And I suppose, you know, what has actually happened in Leash? Look, it may very well be a good thing. You know, people do need to bury hatchets here and to move on. Clearly the important thing here is Leash Hurling and the Leash team are more important than personalities here. And the moving on, in my view, is probably two things. We need to fix things quickly here around the team, and we need to fix the causes of why it happened here. If the issue was that there wasn't finance here to support a proper management team, to give the team the very, very best resource and the very, very best opportunity it could of winning matches, well, then we need to look at that, and we need to look at alternatives. And I think the second part, it then sort of falls into that, finding the causes. Generally speaking, county boards look after these. Generally speaking, county boards are populated by volunteers. And I've said this before, and I'm not commenting on anybody's performance here, but the system of putting people into county boards is a democratic system, which might have worked well up to 20 or 30 years ago, where volunteers populate these jobs. There may have been the wrong people completely for it. This has completely changed in business life, in work life, in government organizations, you name it. There was a style of promotion in these places called seniority. It's dead. Now you select the right people for the job. And there's no, I do hear this said the whole time, other volunteers, you need to cut them a bit of slack here. Well, the fullback on the Leash Hurling team or the Carlow Hurling team or the goalkeeper on the Kerry Hurling team is also a volunteer, and we hold him to a pretty high accountability here, and they're also volunteers. So I think it might be a good fork in the road for people to really think about the selection process for this and maybe go handpick people with right competencies that are able to deliver what's needed here, rather than just relying on people who have gone through 4 or 5 years with their club and suddenly they're shoved into the county board and they may be the wrong people for that. I'm not saying they are, I'm not saying they aren't. But, you know, clearly there has been a problem that has caused this that needs to get fixed here. And the third point, Willie, I would say is, and sorry, the point I wanted to make, I also make, this is a very difficult year. GA are very low in finances at the minute. There's no revenue coming in. There's no revenue stream coming in. And sometimes we've got to look at alternatives. How can we do things alternatively? And having explored all of those things, Then if you can go to your county manager and say, look, here's where we are. We are who we are here. We have absolutely explored everything here, and here's our funding to be able to provide what we want to provide. And then, you know, maybe at that stage, people need to come to an understanding of where they are at that stage. And a third point I would make, Willie, and I said on your show a year ago that I would never speak about this again, that at national level, this needs to be looked at about developing counties. And Brian can certainly speak very, very well about Offaly at the minute. I'm sure somebody from Carlow could speak the same. They have done so once or once. This needs, but I'm not going to go into that because you'll need about four shows to really get to the nub of that problem.
Yeah, well, I suppose there's a lot in that, Brian. And like, I mean, it's county boards being able to back a manager, but like, are they unrealistic kind of expectations in that, you know, Limerick would have big backing, you know, big sponsorship backing? Like, is it realistic for Laois to get to their level of backing, or is it, you know, do you have to make do with what you have and make the best of what you have? Like, is it a pipe dream to think that it can be a level playing field financially across the board?
I think it is, Willie, if we're being brutally honest. I think we see these inequalities, not just in the GAA. I think we see it in all sports in the world. Like, we see it in the Premier League, we see it in NFL, we see it in the NBA. So, you know, they are issues in all games. And yeah, sometimes you do have to just cut your cloth to measure. And I appreciate that there needs to be certain standards set. And I fully agree with Cheddar in that regard. You know, the key things need to be in place in most counties. I think with the introduction of the GPA, I think from a player's perspective, a lot of these things have significantly improved, and there's a lot more playing field from, you know, as I said, from the players in terms of expenses and gear and meals after training, because these were all issues, you know, when we were playing, Willie. You know, so thankfully, a lot of those things are sorted in terms of, you know, high performance and trying to make sure that you pay like the physios and the strength and conditioning coaches and the hurling coaches and whoever else. You know, like, that does cost an awful lot of money. And I, like, it's very hard for these smaller counties. And I think, you know, Cheddar has obviously said it very, very well, you know, and we all know this, that in certain counties, there just is not that industry or you know, businesses within the county that have the money to back them. And we also obviously have the vicious circle of, you know, when the counties aren't as successful, people, you know, they're not just going to throw money away for nothing at the same time. Yeah. So, you know, it's very, very difficult. You know, you can understand why AIG come in and back Dublin. Like, Dublin are a capital. They're the most successful team in the last 10 years in football. They're the flagship team in terms of Gaelic football in Ireland. So, you know, and obviously it's the capital as well. So it's you know, it's very, very easy to see why they go back to them. Like, do spending caps and all that sort of work, I don't think they will. It's no more than trying to say that managers shouldn't be paid.
Yeah, you know, we'll go underground. Of course, underground. Yeah,
I'll go underground and supporters' clubs in other ways. There'll always be ways of finding this. So it's not nice. You know, will it mean that certain teams can never catch up? It doesn't. You know, it doesn't. But will they ever have the same funds? They probably won't. And it'll be few and far between, but we've seen it. I know I keep referring to Premier League, but it's probably the easy thing you can refer to it. But we did see Leicester come up and you know, produce magical year with much less spending power than, say, Man City or Chelsea or whoever at the time. So, you know, we're after seeing Tipperary footballers and Cavan footballers there at the weekend as well come and give magical performances too and winning, you know, their provincial titles. But to say that teams will stay at the top and actually dominate with the big teams on a consistent base, it's very, very difficult to do that. Number one, from demographics, and number two, from a financial perspective.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. It's an interesting one. Because they're obviously funding from games development funding to improve county, you know, or hurling within the county, and that comes from the GAA, and that's their responsibility. But there's also the spending on the senior hurling team, you know, which is kind of like county board. And like, I mean, there is the argument, Cheddar, like, I mean, in their defence, they're volunteers, and it has to be pointed out that the Laois have an incredible centre of excellence. They have great facilities, and like, I mean, they deserve credit for that. There's some good people working there. There's some not so good people that work in there. They are volunteers. So when you're looking at these things above and beyond to raise funds, do these people have the time, you know, the knowledge, the expertise, like the point you're making, I suppose, Cheddar, and we've talked about it on the show before, about maybe putting in a full-time professional in there, and suddenly the county boards might be self-sufficient and they might have the expertise to go out and put a plan together and go to businesses and go to, you know, people outside and kind of build up the Laois GAA brand. You know, and that's a marketing, you know, professional. There's loads of ways this is falling down, I suppose, Cheddar.
And there is, and like, there's other complexities here as well. You know, I'm glad that it's Brian's on the show. You know, he comes from a dual county as well. You know, so you have those added complexities and those added tensions into it. But I suppose, you know, have we, and look, people need to be very, very clear on this as well. There are certain fundamentals that's needed in management of a sports team, any sports team, but at the minute we're talking about hurling, that if you don't have in place, then don't start talking about closing gaps on top teams or anything like that, because you won't, because those other top teams have moved off into the distance and they'll continually move off into the distance by improving themselves. And my last point to make on it is this, have we done enough to raise the funds to support this? And I'm talking about how we went and robbed the bank, if I was to go to the end of the earth here or the end term on this, and find what we need to do this. I don't think we are anywhere near that. That's, I think, the real issue here, because I think until you have explored all of that, you kind of come out and say then that we don't have the funds to do this. I think that needs to be explored. But I think to do that needs really smart, competent people about how to work around that. I think there's a secondary point there, and that's what I'm talking about, that third, you know, the third point of time with the national development and that. I think if you're in a county that has the ability to be able to explore proper sponsorship, as some counties have done, well, is there not a need then for a competition authority type approach to it, whereby, you know, the counties that don't have that ability need a further leg up from company funds or from GAA funds and so on and so on. You know, people need to make some tough and hard decisions on that and not be swayed by just county votes and all of this thing. If the genuine thing here, or the objective, is to try and grow hurling to a 10, 12, 14 All-Ireland Championship or 32 County All-Ireland Championship, whatever that is, over a period of time, well, then there needs to be different strategies to look at that. But I'll just finish on the one point, Woolley, that, you know, the people with the most influence here is your county board. And that's just the way it is. That's the structure that we've got to deal with here. Are they doing enough to make sure that this happens? And I will even throw this out here for discussion. Is it priority to have a fantastic physical center of excellence and not have a fantastic management team and development plan for hurling your county? What's the priority? I know what mine would be. And I know there was a fantastic book a number of years ago where somebody went around and explored what makes some of these countries great. I think they looked at New Zealand, they looked at hockey in Canada, they also looked at athletics in Kenya, and that particular brother who did this, and the last thing that they prioritized in all of those places was physical facilities. They spent money on the development of their people and the development of their players, and I think we need to look at that. And I'm going to finish on this, Woolley. Did we need to spend 80 million on Cork Party Kiev, or is it now 120 million? Would that not have been better? And this is a Cork issue. Would that not have been better spending money on a fantastic coaching and development structure in Cork or wherever? It makes no difference. And of course, Woolley, that raises another issue about over-budgeting, because you might spend an awful lot of money in your county team this year and then be completely spent for the next 10 years. You can't do that either. So we need to be pragmatic and have common sense about this. But I do think we really need to look at this and have different priorities about what's important here.
Yeah, no, definitely. We'll have to move off that, lads. You could actually do a full show on all that kind of stuff, to be honest. But we have two huge semi-finals. I can't wait for these. They're going to be fantastic. I'm going to Croke Park on Sunday and I can't wait for Galway Limerick. We're going to start there. I don't know what it is about semi-finals, Brian, but I remember last year the two semi-finals were classics. I remember the year before they were classics as well. I'm even looking back, that was the Galway Clare replay and Cork Limerick. And last year, as we remember well, Limerick and Kilkenny and Wexford and Tipperary. And then I'm thinking back to being in Thurles for the replay the year before between Waterford and Kilkenny for a number. I don't know what it is about All-Ireland semi-finals, but it brings out the best in the hurling season.
Yeah, look, I suppose it could be very simply put, it's the cream has risen to the top, in fairness. So you've probably four informed teams. You don't just end up in semi-finals by luck of the draw. And, you know, they're having an absolute cut off each other, and it tends to be just magnificent occasions, you said. Now, we were lucky, obviously, in the last number of years that we had huge crowds, and they obviously added to the occasion. But I can tell you firsthand, I was in Limerick last Saturday for the Ireland quarterfinal between Tipperary and Galway, and there was no crowd there, but I was just as captivated. I was getting carried away on the radio. It was just magical to be actually there. So I do envy you going on Sunday, I have to say.
You're turning into a John Milan now on the radio, are you?
Well, you couldn't but be when you're watching that game. Like, it was just, you know, it was, to me, it was epic. Maybe it's purely hurling shades on me, but I just thought it was a fantastic game, and you know, end-to-end stuff, yeah. and the goals obviously met it, and it was real cut and thrust to championship hurling, and huge amount of talking points and all those sort of things. So yeah, I think we're in for the same at the weekend, whether there's a crowd or not. I think we're in for two crackers.
We are. Like, I mean, another little subplot to this, Cheddar, is that Shane O'Neill and John Kiley are good friends. They've played together since they were 14 years of age. You know, it's just a small little subplot. But the other one is that Shane O'Neill would obviously know the Napiershig lads very well. And David Dempsey, Peter Casey, there's eight of them. William O'Donoghue, Conor Boylan, Jerome Boylan, Adrian Breen, and Mike Casey, who's injured. And I'm thinking of Napiershig, whatever pub they drink in, and Limerick have won the All-Ireland, and Shane O'Neill sitting in with Shane Dowling and a few of the Napiershig lads, maybe the week after, and he's picking their brain, not thinking in the future he's going to be managing Galway against them in an All-Ireland semi-final, and he knows everything about the Limerick game plan because he's curious, and the lads are in a social capacity and they're telling him because they know him and they like him. Like Shane O'Neill was talking about knowing the players, saying it might be a hint. He said we would know the players, but that may be a hindrance in that you might have preconceived ideas about players. So he was playing it down, but surely Shane O'Neill would know very, very well how Limerick operate.
Yes, look, he would, naturally enough. And I think Shane, first of all, I think it's interesting, you know, I think Shane and John, you know, they're two very steady people, you know, that I think to come across, you know, very, very sound people as such. It's the first point I'd like to make. And the second point is Shane's point. You know, it may be a strength, it could very well be a weakness. But to be honest with you, Willie, I don't think it makes any difference, because the level of awareness of the opposition, including the level of awareness on players individually now at this stage, would be of such height that whether you were living down the street from William O'Donoghue or not wouldn't make any difference. You know, you'll have all of that video analysis done, or at least I would expect at that level that they would have it done. So I don't think that's as big an issue as it's made up. It's a media issue, to be honest with you. I think the level of awareness and the knowledge on opposition and all of that, you know, is of such now that, you know, whether you're living in the parish or not makes no difference. But I'm really playing a certain way, and I've tweaked it a little bit over the last couple of years. But I probably think that Galway have the way Galway set up, have the probably a very, very good game plan to be able to outdo Limerick in that. And you know what was really interesting the last day? And I'd say it's difficult to actually form opinions on games looking at it on the television, because you don't see things. And I'd be very interested to hear what Brian has said, you know, being at the matches. And interesting, Willie, then how the bloody hell you got to Croke Park next Sunday or next Saturday. But anyway, that's a bite about.
I applied for an accreditation like everybody else, and that's it. I got one. Listen, you know that I'm a big voice in the hurling world now, so I'm bound to get into these important games.
What's interesting, and that hasn't been said at all, I mean, there was absolute blue murder about Derek McGrath playing sweepers and all of that for 3 or 4 or 5 years. But there's not a word when Galway set up with a sweeper, or as it turns out, Tipperary had to adjust and play a sweeper, and so on, or Kilkenny had to play a sweeper. You know, there's not a word about it now when some of the stronger counties actually do that. But I do think I was really interested that Galway changed their team, not necessarily changed their team, which they did, but they also changed their method of play the last day against Tipperary to good effect, I would have thought, Brian. And it'll be, if they're able to do that in such a short space of time, I think they'll be able to do some things to really work on the Limerick game plan as well.
Yeah, I found it very interesting that they obviously started David Burke and put him straight back into the sweeper position. And you're right, like Galway now have played a sweeper in the last two games, you know, against Kilkenny, played Pádraig Mannion there, and now against Tipperary, they played David Burke there. But interestingly, it just shows how ruthless Shane O'Neill's backroom team is. They whipped David Burke at half-time, and that was tactical. And the same with Johnny Cohen. So the boys played into stiff enough breeze in that first half, and Shane O'Neill wasn't happy. Obviously, maybe the stats were coming in that they weren't happy with their possession or use of possession or whatever. And, you know, the two boys got whipped. So that just shows the type that they're playing. You know, yeah, like I found it interesting even watching the Sunday game analysis the other night saying, you know, that Tipperary were playing a sweeper. They were forced to play a sweeper because they had a spare defender, you know, because obviously they're not going to not play six backs, especially in this type of weather. So it was interesting from that perspective that wasn't kind of put forward that way. Tipperary didn't want to set up with a sweeper. It was the way that Galway obviously set up.
Yeah.
You know, and in the second half, Galway reverted back to a more traditional style of you know, more or less 15 players in the same position. At that stage, Pádraig Mannion probably dropped a bit deeper, but not necessarily playing as an out-and-out sweeper.
That's one thing, though, Brian, about Galway now versus Galway versus Limerick in 2017, is if we knew exactly how Galway were going to play back in 2017. You know, they had a very defined style based on big men, long puckouts, kind of a long ball game, Johnny Glynn, you know, all these kind of things. No real surprises kind of were jumping out at you. They'd been All-Ireland champions the year before, and it was almost like, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Now I'm not sure how they're going to do. You know what I mean? They're much more flexible tactically than they were. And like, I mean, that's going to be a concern from a Limerick point of view.
Yeah, and like, if you look at their players, you know, even their backs are not fixed either. You know, like, you know, Grod McInerney's able to play in the full back line just as easy as in the half back line, whether it's centre back or wing back. The same with Fintan Burke, same with Shane Cooney. Dotty Burke can go anywhere, obviously, as well. Pádraig Mannion can go from half back to midfield. So it's very, very difficult to actually analyse their team and say where they're going to be. But one thing I think Tipperary got wrong the last day, and I'm not being overly critical of the player, but playing Niall O'Mara in defence worked against Cork. But playing Niall O'Mara man-mark and Cottle Mannion seemed a very, very strange decision, and it didn't work last week. You know, Cottle Mannion's a very, very elusive type player. We rave about him on loads of occasions. He's a big player for Galway. He's very, very difficult to tie down. And Niall O'Mara, obviously, is a very good hurler, excellent, and does a lot of good stuff for Tipperary, probably underrated a little bit. But being an out-and-out man-marker, just seemed a strange decision from Liam Sheedy last week.
Yeah, no, maybe it did. Cheddar, yeah, and it was hard to tell on the television just as well you were there that it was O'Mara that was on Mannion that day, because, you know, it's like when you're watching hurling on the television now that everything's kind of, you know, positions are so fluid within the middle third, it's hard to tell who's picking who up.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult to play, and you're dead right. It's only when you're there, like, it's very hard to analyse a game. So, Willie, I don't begrudge you going at the weekend. if you can get accreditation, I don't begrudge anyone.
I think Cheddar's a little bit jealous now, but it sounds
But I was about to say, if you're applying in future, you can get myself and Cheddar two passes as well while you're at it.
Come here, Cheddar. Just to make you even more jealous, Cheddar, that I'm going on Sunday and you're watching on television, here's a few matchups that I'm going to be seeing in the flesh. Dotty Burke versus Aaron Galan, Joe Cooney versus Garrod Hegarty, Sean Finn versus Conor Whelan, Cathal Mannion or Joe Cannon versus Declan Hannan, Fintan Burke versus Tom Morrissey, Pádraig Mannion versus Keane Lynch. Now, that might not definitely happen. It could be Johnny Cohen, but someone will mark Keane Lynch. Like, I mean, this is really a clash of two heavyweight sluggers.
Yes, it is. And it's going to be very, very much about winning matchups, I think. And I think Galway have an edge here. And, you know, if you look at it, you know, the Limerick game plan works a lot. It depends a lot on the work rate of Garrod Hegarty and Tom Morrissey going up the wings and make themselves available for ball. But it also depends a lot on their physicality and aggressiveness to be able to win ball and that, and their athleticism. But Fintan Burke and Joe Cooney are two fair operators as well. And as Joe Cooney showed the last day, that when he was an opportunity and was given a license to go forward, it might hurt the other teams.
Yeah.
All we have backline in its physique and that is well able to match the Limerick half hour line, and I'd be interested, you know, they're the things that I'm going to be really, really interested to see. I think there's two there's a couple of big things here that I think if they fall one way or the other for each team, might mean a big difference. I think Galway have been much better with Aidan Hart back there, and that's not just because he scored a goal. Loftus had a hard time. His time will come. But I'd also say on the other side that, you know, has Shane Cooney the pace at this level for All-Ireland semi-final and final? So far I haven't seen it. He's a very, very steady hurler. But you already have a warrior, swashbuckling full back and Dahi Burke. Do you need a really quick Ollie Canning-style hurler around him now to be able to mop up the place that's going to come around there? I think we will need that. And I think they'll definitely need it on Saturday, because you have Graham McCaughey and Peter Casey. Peter Casey needs serious watching. That Shane is a very forceful, hard hurler, but maybe that's not the type of person that's needed here, because if Burke takes Gillan, there's going to be breaks here. Here's two heavyweights having to go one another. There's going to be breaks, and you need quickness and really sharp hands to mop up that ball. And so I'd worry about that. Equally on the other side, and I think these are all... this is on the other side for Galway, that Cahill, Whelan and Brian Concannon, if that's the way they work out full, and if they isolate Dan Morrissey and Barry Nash and takes Sean Finn out to the corner, wherever they take him, so that he's not able to give the support play to that full back line, that's a weakness for Limerick that we've seen so far. Now, that could change. They might have a different team there the next day. But they're the things I'm looking at. And I do think that Johnny Cohen is the ideal. He was originally a cornerback. I remember playing a Portage against us, 13 or 14. He was a cornerback, maybe wing back at that stage. He has defensive qualities about how to look after the likes of Keane Lynch and that. I would think that he would go man to man there. So there's some really interesting matchups, in terms of how the game might unfold.
Yeah, you definitely make a good point on Shane Cooney. He won't fancy marking either of the two corner forwards, either Casey or Mulcahy. What about the sweeper, Brian? Because you mentioned the sweeper. Surely a sweeper for Galway this weekend, like an extra defender, would be counterproductive, given that they will give Limerick Declan Hannan, completely free for a free roll, which he will revel in. Whereas I would be looking at the fact that Declan Hannan doesn't really mark his man, he marks space, and maybe Joe Canning could run amok on that, like Tony Kelly, did, or Cathal Mannion, or, would Galway be thinking they're being conservative, but actually mess up their own attacking game plan by playing the sweeper?
Yeah, I'm not so sure that they will actually play a sweeper, because if we go back and analyse, the reason they use a sweeper against Kilkenny would have been that they felt that Kilkenny were most uncomfortable playing against the sweeper, and especially, as I said, the last day trying to work the sharp hookouts down through the line. So they felt that was a weakness, Kilkenny, and that's how they would exploit it, and they more or less did, in fairness, for most of that game. And then the last day they set up the sweeper in the first half because, as I said, they were into a strong breeze. So that was my thinking on why they set up a sweeper. So I don't think they will actually do so at the weekend. Now look, I think this is, you've touched on this point, this is the beauty of what Shane O'Neill has done with this Galway team right now, is it's very, very difficult to tell what they're going to do, and it's very difficult to tell what personnel they've on the field. Now Shane Cooney has done well to date, but as I just touched on earlier as well, Shane O'Neill's not afraid to make hard decisions, and I think because of that we might actually see Loftus coming in a cornerback, because obviously he has that pace, that unbelievable pace that's needed, and he might pick up either Graham McClatty or Peter Casey in that situation.
Yeah, no, that could happen. All right. The thing about the sweeper as well, Cheddar, is that if you give Limerick the spare man, you're just making it hard on yourselves, because they'll be flicking it around between each other to get into it. You know what I mean? You need to leave none of their men free, if at all possible, rather than actually hand them one at the back.
No, I agree with Brian. I don't think you'll see a sweeper, but you might see an extra player in the middle of the field, as a sort of either a defensive midfielder or maybe an attacking midfielder, moving in. Not dissimilar to what Cork used a couple of years ago. So you might see some of that. And some of the time to do that, it is to make the opposition uncomfortable. So you might want to take Sean Finn out of the cornerback. So you might, you might be going in and out. You're not out the whole time that Limerick decided to do something, to do something new to what you were doing. But you make it difficult. Now you're isolating Dan Morrissey and Barry Nash inside on Concannon. You might do something like that and try it for a while. Galway definitely have the ability to do that. I don't think you'll see an out-and-out sweeper as such. Now, Limerick, strangely enough, in this year, are playing a lot more direct ball into the three inside men. I don't mean direct as in top of them, but really, really good quality ball into them when they're really, really going well. If you were to say, ask me straight out, do I expect to see Galway play with a sweeper, as in sweeper working off the edge of the D? No, I don't. I certainly think that he'd be no use to you there, to be honest with you, against Limerick.
Yeah, no problem. Here's one quick one, Brian, is that, like, I mean, Delhi Burke versus Aaron Gillan is one everybody be looking forward to, and they're both great fetchers. But could we see Limerick pull a surprise and start Seamus Flanagan, maybe, who gave Delhi Burke all sorts of different problems in the All-Ireland final that year, ran him all over left and right, and his movement really was something Delhi Burke would probably relish the kind of wrestle on the edge of the square with Gillan.
No, I don't think they will, being honest now, because I just think that we saw Limerick and the strength of their bench again in that Munster final. You know, Waterford had troubled them right up to that second water break. And then obviously they were able to bring in the strength and depth. And Seamus Flanagan came on and hurled well. Pat Ryan came in and hurled well, and a couple more as well along with that. So I can't imagine Limerick changing too much in terms of their personnel and the starting 15. Now, look, obviously, again, John Kiely's not afraid to run the changes from that perspective, but I just think that full forward line that they have at the moment is top class. You know, so I just, it'd be a huge change, and then they'll be losing that element of bringing one of those players on. I can't imagine any of those three in the full forward line moving out to the half forward line. There is maybe a spot, if Keane Lynch goes back to midfield, there is maybe a spot there somewhere, because David Reedy started there the last day at centre forward, so there might be one spot up for grabs, but I still cannot see them not starting that three men inside. They've got to back what they have, and what they have is top class, and it's getting them places at the moment, obviously. And I just think they'll back it once again.
Right. Here's another thing on the Puckouts cheddar that, like, I mean, for Galway, because Limerick are almost getting at the stage of Dublin in the football, where I don't really talk about Dublin that much. I talk about what other teams can do, you know, to counteract them, rather than we kind of know how Limerick kind of work. Here's the thing Waterford kind of showed us, in that they conceded a Puckout and then retreated off the full back line. Like, I mean, say, for example, if any of the Limerick full back line have the ball, are you not better off back off them, let them come out with it, rather than commit yourself and now you're in no man's land? Whereas if you're backing off, you're making the pitch smaller, you know, you're cutting down space for the half forward line to come in for that love, and Keane Lynch to come in for that lovely short ball. And only would you come near the Limerick full back line if they're, you know, get out past the 45 and they're potentially in scoring distance. You know, Limerick wouldn't be encouraging their full back line to be shooting. Would it confuse Limerick, the point I'm making, to take that short stick pass option away from them by actually backing off them instead of rushing in?
It all depends on the team. You really need to look at the resources, particularly in their full back line, how they're going to process the ball out. But I'd be very, very surprised at this level if that would work for you, Woody. And you may hedge. So, you know, you might hedge and give it to the corner back. And then he puts the ball in his hurley and he makes ground. And then you shimmy to go to him, but you don't actually go in for the tackle. So you force him to take it to hand. Now he's got to hit it. Otherwise, now he's got to bounce the ball off the ground and take the hand again. So you'll do lots of little things like that. But ultimately, you'll probably push up on that if you think it's hurting you too much. And I think in hurling, I mean, you just look at, you know, so you pop that pass to Sean Finn. He makes 10 metres, sucks in your tackler, and then pops the ball to Dermot Burns. He is now in shooting territory. It's different than Gaelic football in that. It has happened. We all do it. We all get our player to hedge in the middle, drop back a man. And sometimes that's a defensive game, because when you go long, then your wing forwards have time enough to be able to get under the ball, the breaking ball to the other side, and could have done that brilliantly in two All-Irelands. But you need to be able to change that up and go full court press if you wanted to actually do that. I'll just go back to the one point, Brian. I do think Limerick will do something in their full forward line. If not necessarily using two players, they may use the players differently. And I thought in when Limerick won the All-Ireland, the early part of the development of their team completely centred around the movement of Seamus Flanagan off the ball. And some of it was real decoy running. And it was very, very cleverly done, that he might actually stand out on the sideline and Limerick would find him, because they had that, you know, they had that real front foot hurling off the half back line. They'd find him, and he was good in doing that. But I do think Limerick will do something. They will not just go head to head. If they can isolate McCaughey and Casey on Shane Cunningham and Aidan Hart, and they get Daithí Burke to follow Aaron Galan out to the sideline, or Seamus Flanagan out to the sideline, or interchange like that, I think if Limerick get something right there, they will bother Galway.
Do you think, Brian?
Look, I fully agree that they're not going to play straightforward out. They're always thinking that they're always trying to find some sort of angle for which they can hurt the opposition. So I don't think they're going to hurl it straight down the field in terms of that. They do tend to try and leave two inside and one isolated. But the point I was probably making was the fact that I don't think they'll change the three players that they have in there at the moment in Graham McCaughey, Aaron Galan and Peter Casey. I just think those three will start, and it won't be Seamus Flanagan starting in this role. Look, obviously everything can be seen on Sunday, but I fully agree with the point that they're very hard to tie down. They're very hard to see what they're doing tactically, and they always seem to have an ace in the hand as well.
Okay, lads, I have to get predictions off you because we're tight for time and we need to do some time on the other semi-final as well. Predictions, and just throw into your prediction on whether Galway need to go for goals or not. Cheddar, I'll start with you because they got two kind of half chances against Tip and went for them. It's not something we really associated with Galway. Can they outpoint Limerick?
I think they can. I think it's more basic than that, though. You know, can they get the edge in the game and have the type of team to get on the field to really disrupt Limerick and cause them problems in the way they play and make them look ordinary? Because we've seen times this year and the last couple of years when Limerick looked very slick and very, very good. But a lot of that was that the Limerick game plan completely was on top of the other game, the opposition game plan. I think Galway will be able to disrupt that enough to cause a lot of problems. There are some worrying things, Brian, and you might be able to explain this. Galway's use of the ball with the extra man the last 15 minutes I thought was quite poor. Did they get the extra man into space? Yes, when they got the goal, but, you know, was it enough around that 15, 20 minutes? I didn't think it was. But I just think that they have enough things in their team and enough right people in the right places to disrupt Limerick, and I do think that they'll sneak through. Look, it's going to be very, very close. It's a one point either way, but I think that Galway might just get through on that.
Okay, quickly, Brian.
I will go for Limerick. I just think they're a step above everyone at the moment. They, as I said, tactically they're very astute. They're on the crest of a wave. They're very, very hungry after last year, and they obviously want to win this Ireland back to back. So I just find, especially when we saw in the Munster final, they were disrupted for long periods that game by Waterford, but they just have a phenomenal bench, and I just think they will do just about enough. But I agree with Cheddar. I think, I know every game's hard call. This Galway team should not be underestimated going into this game at the weekend, but as I said, I think Limerick just about have enough.
Yeah, it's going to be a classic. I'll go for Limerick as well in that, and we'll come back and we'll look at the other semi-final.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat and have a shite like him and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in the air. I don't know, it was pure luck now, in fairness. Pure luck. But it's fucking bullshit, as you see yourselves.
All right, Kilkenny Waterford lads in Croke Park on Saturday. And I just want to quickly touch on this before we talk about the matches. Fergal Horgan is appointed here as referee. Now, Liam Sheedy was given out about Johnny Murphy refereeing the Tipperary Galway game because he was a Munster man. Now, whether you think that's fair or not, would you think, Cheddar, that the appointment of Fergal Horgan, a Tipperary man, Liam Cahill is a Tipperary man, there might be a rivalry between Kilkenny and Tipperary. Am I reading too much into this? Is this unfair in referees? Or, like, should there not referees be picked that even any sort of conversation like this would arise?
I think it's made up by media, Uli, and I'm finding the light at you on this one here. I think Fergal Horgan is a very, very strong referee. I love what he does, lets the game flow most of the time and as much as he can. I think he will have no favouritism whatsoever against anybody. But I think there's a separate thing there just for the optics of this and just for public opinion and all of that. Was there somebody else that could have refereed at this level that could have refereed this match? And that was, that was completely neutral as such. I haven't looked at it. Maybe there wasn't. But I do think, Woolley, one other thing, somebody mentioned this in some media article recently, you know, for a number of years there, we had four or five really top referees around the country, for, you know, whether they were from Wexford, Westmead, and so on. I just don't think, and Pat Hurling here, I just don't think we have that number at the minute. And I think maybe from the fourth referee up to the tenth, you know, maybe it may not be at the level that we would like to see for this type of match. And I think, you know, referee a little bit too much to rule rather than, you know, letting the game flow and, you know, what we would like to see in that.
Yeah, maybe that's it. What do you think of that about that, Brian? I remember us having some issues with a referee around a big game last year, something similar to this.
Yeah, like, look, I think the GAA have been slowly over the last couple of years trying to erode that whole county bias that people have down through the years associated with referees, you know, and they tend to see, well, look, these referees are extremely professional. This whole county bias is slowly but surely starting to, you know, be gone out of the game, and that's what they're kind of setting their masthead at this stage, you know, and they're just going ahead with it. But
so what you're saying is this is an old school kind of gripe rather than like, you're just reminding me that the lads on Monday were saying, Paddy Staplin said, referees have their own ambitions and they want to get finals, and the idea that a referee wouldn't do it fairly and ruin their own chances doesn't make sense, in the, you know.
Exactly. And I think, look, I think GAA have accepted that. I think the vast majority of people accepted that. So, like, I think Liam Sheedy was really, his main issue is he probably wasn't happy overall with the officiating. Now, Martin Kiley, who I was doing the radio with the last week, he said that this was Johnny Murphy's first game of the year. And now, I don't have the stats in that, but I'm just going off what he said. And if that's true, well, that's not good enough that in an All-Ireland quarterfinal, the first game you referee for the year is that particular game. Because we know the pressure that that referees are under in these games, and how big a game it was between Galway and Tipperary, that it had gone down to the wire on a number of occasions. You know, there was only 1 point between them in the last three games, and obviously this one it was 2 points. So it was a very, very big game to give to a referee when he hadn't refereed already this year. I would have more an issue with that than actually where Johnny Murphy was actually from. And he got a couple of calls wrong. He was saved by his linesman Sean Stack at one stage, and that was great to see, being honest, because you know, that was a bad call where he, I think it was Shane Cooney, blew for catching the ball three times, but Sean Stack interceded and made sure that the ball was thrown in instead of a free. It was tough, but look, it ain't simple, and I know you probably discussed in Lent about the sending offs. Like it's very, very hard. It's very hard. Maybe the analysis on referees is very, very difficult at the moment. You know, it's not helped when Don Logue Cusack comes out on Sunday game asking Johnny Murphy in particular to explain his decisions. I think he could have maybe had that a little bit wider and said that maybe referees in general, it might be something that they might look at, because we see it in other games like in Aussie Rules, where the referee might, and actually Rugby League in Australia, where the referees will explain their decisions. And that's a very, very quick thing that can be done. And I suppose it just gives clarity to everyone at home. You know, you can agree or disagree, but it gives clarity. So, yeah, I think Don Logue's wider point was good, but maybe not. Maybe just singling out Johnny from that perspective.
Okay. Stephen Bennett has been doing media during the week, lads, and this is just fantastic stuff from a player in the lead up to an Ireland semi-final, because I'm a little bit, I'm very interested in Liam Cahill and what his secrets are, you know, and what kind of message he gives and all those kind of things. And this is just brilliant, I thought. So he says, this is Stephen Bennett talking. He says, you'd be there in training at the start of the year. You'd get the ball, turn your man and shoot over from the sideline, and you think you've done great. But the next thing they're giving out to you, because he didn't go directly at the goal. It's a new thing for us, but it's actually brilliant. And I was just thinking about that, going, like, how often do, you know, points over your shoulder from the side and actually go over? And that's the message to Liam Cahill. Stop doing that. Let's start going direct. And so Stephen continues on and he says, another thing is if you hit the ball to a teammate's feet, they'll crack up and kill you. But if you hit it so hard that it flies past them, they actually don't care. They talk about honest mistakes and they won't care if you're making honest mistakes. Like, isn't that funny again, Cheddar? You're looking at, here's the message, take them on. And like, I mean, if you're given a pass... and you're given a pass that goes to hand and you miss, nothing will be said to you. Whereas if you give a little scuttery one along the ground, they'll hop off you. You know what I mean? You're getting some little idea of what Liam Cahill's kind of message is to them.
Look, I'd be surprised about that. You know, first of all, you know, it's just common knowledge. You know, we practice ball to hand, ball to feet, you know, in terms of moving the ball between players and that. But clearly, it just makes sense that if you can strike the hand, he has the hand, the ball in the hand, he's on the move, he's facing the goals, he can take the shot if that's what you want. It just makes sense to do that. But I wouldn't rule out striking the ball to feet, because you could be in a close situation where you can't get the ball away. And
yeah,
players. And look, Patrick Horgan and all of the top players can take the ball to hand off the floor or off the air, no matter what, as quick and as efficiently. So I would be surprised that they ban that. I'm not surprised that they ban, you know, I'm assuming that there's a little bit more sophistication than what's been said here from Liam, that they're banning that sort of hit and hope ball up the ground. That's a different ball. But in terms of a strike, any player at this level is one touch the hand on the move, and they'll probably touch the ball the hand when they're turning, as Patrick does, and he's your back on already. So, and there's a lot of times you will want to put the ball to space. I mean, we spoke a minute ago about the Limerick full forward line. Peter Casey and Mulcahy, you put the ball 3 metres either side of them and you're in serious trouble as a defender. You put the ball to hand and then you're asking them to turn around, eyeball you and beat you. Well, you know, try and take on Conor Prunty or try and take on the Galway full back and try and eyeball him and go by his shoulder. Not as easy to do. But if you put the ball to the side of him and he takes it on the run and you've already broke his tackle by taking the ball to hand, now it's a much different thing. So I think there might be more context to what was said here. And, you know, this might have been something that was said in the media article, but didn't supply the context around it.
Right, okay. You seem to have a serious problem with the media cheddar. That's all I'm saying. So, like, I'm not going to get very defensive. Now we're twisting Stephen Bennett's words here. come here. We want to move on to Kilkenny here quickly. And, like, I mean, I have down here Kilkenny have become unpredictable, and not unpredictable in the manner that Galway have become unpredictable in a good way. Kilkenny have become unpredictable in that we don't know what Kilkenny are going to show up. Is it going to be the team that were outplayed by Galway for 50 minutes, the team that were outplayed by Dublin for half a game, or the team that blew Dublin out of the water and the team that came back from the dead against Galway, Brian?
Yeah, there is a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde going on, I suppose. I can definitely accept that point. And yet, they're in All-Ireland semi-final unbeaten. So, Brian Cody will be quite happy with that. Walter Walsh, Colin Fennelly didn't hurl well the last day. Will both of them survive? I think Fennelly will for definite. Walter Walsh maybe might get another chance, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's not on the starting 15 at the weekend. You know, Paddy Deegan was out the last day. He should be returning. So, will Billy Ryan get back in? You know, hard to know as well. So, you know, Kilkenny certainly as well. You just never know what way they're going to pick their team, even from starters. You know, will they start TJ full forward and Colin a corner? Or, you know, they're really good that way as well. It's very, very hard to predict what they're actually doing. You know, Martin Keown, I thought, was excellent in that Leinster final. He's direct running, he's work rate, his selflessness, everything. Very unlucky for a goal, obviously, as well. Probably should have carried it another couple of yards to make sure of it. But he was excellent. But, like, the one thing, they have got better and a lot more comfortable with dealing with short ball. The congestion in the middle of the field, they don't, well, this year, from what I've seen, they don't lump the ball up the field as much. Now, the other side of that is that loses the threat of Colin Fennelly, who likes, obviously, direct, you know, long direct ball. He's able to manage a lot of fullbacks. You know, he'll be a man scoring at the weekend. He'll be looking for a lot of early ball to try and get him on the ball and maybe bring back that, you know, almost unstoppable play that he has over the last number of years for both Ballyhale and for Kilkenny. So it's interesting. You know, it's a style of mixes that they're probably, or a mix of styles that they're doing much better, you know, over the last couple of games, but they probably still haven't found their groove or one that probably suits them entirely. But as I said, to give them some bit of reprieve against Galway, they were probably forced into hurling a little bit more unorthodox than they probably would have wanted it themselves. So as I said, from the outside, Cody has this team in All-Ireland semi-final. People not really bigging up their chances. You know, a lot of people give them Waterford the huge chance, and rightly so. But, you know, before, Kilkenny would have been seen as, you know, hot favourites for this game at the weekend. And Cody probably has a stick to beat them with, even though they won the Leinster final over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. Is there an argument, Cheddar, that Kilkenny's kind of going through the lines messes up Walter Walsh, who might be dependent on kind of more direct ball?
No, I don't think so. I think Walter Walsh is a very skillful hurler. He's a huge man. but a very, very skillful hurler in that as well. Look, I think it's more that he has just lost form at the minute, and particularly for Colin Fennelly. Colin Fennelly has just lost form for a minute, and there's probably reasons for that. He's had two long years, two fantastic years with Ballyhale, and that as well. And I think the other thing that Ballyhale play a certain type of ball to Colin Fennelly, which is incredibly effective, and it's not a dropper, and it's not defeat. It's that type of trajectory ball that he's able to use his upper body strength to hold you off and take at the hand. It's nearly that ball, the hand that Liam Cahill is talking about, or that Stephen Bennett was talking about in that article. And when that happens, and Ballyhale play a huge amount of that to Colin and hugely effective to him, Kilkenny don't seem to play that type of ball. And it may very well be that you just simply wouldn't get away with a one-trick pony type game like that at inter-county level. I mean, you put that type of ball into Dahi Burke or something like that, he'd probably eat you. You know, that's just the way it is. But I do think that there's a really big call for Brian to make on at this weekend. And I think that could have a real big bearing on the winning of the game here. I think, first of all, I think Kilkenny will be delighted that it's Waterford that they're playing. And I think, you know, you went back to Brian makes the point there. You know, Kilkenny are still sort of farming at the minute to an extent. And, you know, they had three different players in the last day, Wiles Keown and Richie Lahey in the middle of the field. And, you know, they've also the likes of Paddy Deegan and Billy Ryan to come in. Richie Hogan is there. Niall Brazen was hugely effective the last day, and, you know, may very well be in the starting line here. And there's also a real surprise packet. He's not really a surprise packet at all, but Adrian Mullen, you know, can he start at the weekend? I want to go back to that point, though. I think the game, I'd love to have been at the game with Waterford the last day, but I think that they left their full back line isolated a lot. They pushed their half back line up the field to win that middle third. I think that could be very dangerous against Kilkenny. And certainly if you have a full forward line of Owen Cody, TJ Reid, Niall Brazel, you know, really, really, really quick players in there, Adrian Mullen, you know, or even Billy Ryan. I think Billy Ryan may well be okay for the weekend. You have a full forward line of Billy Ryan, TJ Reid and Owen Cody, and you will not want to leave your full back line isolated. And I think Waterford are going to have to fix that. And that therein lies a problem, because if they fix it, they're going to have to screen it. And now that takes a presence out of the middle third, which they've been very, very strong in terms of that, you know, real fighting game in the middle third. That takes a little bit away from that. So what do you do? Do you keep doing what you've been doing, really, really good, massive work rate, middle third of the field, winning, turning over an awful lot of ball, winning an awful lot of ball, and hence putting a nice bit of ball into your forward line, but nonetheless leaving a little bit of risk behind you, because you will not want to leave a risk with those type of players behind you, because they will punish you, and they'll punish you with goals. And I thought Todd Waterford leaked a couple of goals that were, you know, a little bit of the loose variety the last day.
Well, there's the thing, like, I mean, because we know Callum Lyons man marked Tony Kelly at centre half back, Brian. So then you have Tadhg Na Bhfirca kind of sweeping from right half back rather than dropping down straight back from centre half back. Could that have been an excuse why they conceded goals, that he couldn't get across in time? Or is it more difficult, you know, to sweep from a wing back position? Than it's the same job. It's just you're starting from the wing, getting back into cover rather than starting at centre half back.
It's definitely not as effective. There's no doubt about that. You know, Tadhg Na Bhfirca has been absolutely excellent in that position. It's a very, very deep line centre back. You know, it's not the out and out seven defender slash sweeper, but he is sweeping. I know you've made this point, this argument a number of times.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely excellent at it.
You'd imagine Callum Lyons will mark TJ Reid this week again, or do you think they'll rip that up?
Yeah, I see. They probably will, to be fair to him. But then you see, look, if Kilkenny throw TJ in the full forward line, you know, then that's, you know, adding another thing for Waterford to think about.
I think
if you go back to Aaron Shanahan's second goal, it was very, very poor defending from Waterford. You know, Prunty obviously lost Aaron Shanahan with the initial strike, but then he got caught up in traffic as well, and there was no one near Shanahan. And even still, Stephen O'Keefe probably be disappointed with himself, but he certainly made up for it later on. Again, I think they conceded 6 or 7 goal chances to Clare. You know, and look, Clare, they tried, they battled hard. It just seemed that Waterford had enough, that they were able to do enough down at the other end of the field. What I think in terms of this weekend, you know, Waterford have a huge work rate, they have a huge intensity, they're very, very fit, but they're going to meet that And we won't even say more, but they'll definitely meet the exact same amount from Kilkenny from that perspective. The exact same work rate, the exact same physicality, the exact same athleticism, because don't ever be fooled by Kilkenny's athleticism. So I think that perspective will make this job a little bit more difficult from Waterford.
We might as well get predictions off you here, lads. Cheddar, I'll start with you. Who do you fancy in this? Like, you very rarely back against the Cats.
I know, it's not that I don't rarely back against them. You know, I obviously think about these things, and I'm thinking about these things for the weekend as well. I think middle third, you know, Jeremy Barron, you know, real engine, Connor Brown, even a bigger engine, you know. So I think it'll hinge a little bit on if Waterford have to screen their full back line, it's going to take their effort out of the middle of the field. Yes, they might stop goals, but they're going to concede a lot there anyway. I think if Kilkenny set up with Billy Ryan, TJ, Cody, or Niall Braswell, really, really quick, penetrative players, that's going to be a problem for Waterford, and they cannot leave their full back line open like they did the last day because they'll concede goals if they do. I think equally on the other side, I think Tommy Walsh, Conor Delaney are suffocating defenders that Desi Hutchinson or Jack Prendergast are that. I know they're quick, but they mightn't actually want to see that. And I just think that this is the game maybe Kilkenny wanted. They may get more game time into Paddy Deegan. You know, Richie Hogan is still to come in there. Adrian Mullen has still to come in there somewhere. They're sort of settling their team. They have another game to settle before an All-Ireland final. I actually think that if the game flows, as I think it is, I think Kilkenny might win by 4 or 5.
Right. I think they've the better team. Whether they have the better form or not, Brian, is the big one. You give us your prediction and throw in where Austin Gleeson will play and whether Conor Gleeson will come back into the Waterford team in your prediction, if that's possible.
Yeah. Well, look, I'll start with Austin Gleeson for starters. I think he relishes playing against Kilkenny. He was, you know, his work rate was very good against Clare. He's starting to maybe bring a little bit more than he maybe did in the Munster final. He's obviously adding scores, and if he brings the two of them, he can be a huge player for Waterford this weekend. Where will they play him? I think again they'll try and exploit Kilkenny from that perspective. They'll look at where can he hurt them most. You know, he's played most of the game a full forward the last day. He came out at times, obviously. I couldn't imagine him starting a full forward. I think they maybe will start him at centre forward. Conor Gleeson, haven't heard much in terms of him, whether he's ready or not. So you know, he hasn't featured much, so I couldn't imagine that happening. In terms of the overall, my prediction, I think I'll go with Kilkenny just for the simple fact that, as I said, I think Waterford are going to meet a team that works just as hard as them, and Kilkenny are probably that little further down the road. They have a decent, you know, they have a decent team. They have a lot of options. They have options to come in off the bench, whereas Waterford at the moment probably just don't have that strength and depth. That's what stopped them against Limerick. But I think there's one thing for certain, this Waterford team, the trajectory they've went in this year under Liam Cahill has been absolutely excellent. They will not stop running. They will not stop working on Saturday evening, and they will stay going for the 73, 74, 75th minute. So definitely the trajectory is up for Waterford, but I think they'll run out just a little bit of road this weekend.
Yeah, I'd probably lean towards Kilkenny as well, but I think it'll be a very, very close one. Right, lads, we'll leave it there. We're just in time so the two of you can go back to work, and I'll send you a postcard from Croke Park on Sunday. So we'll talk to you the following Thursday. Thanks very much, lads.
A football man going to Croker and we sitting at home. Not unbelievable.
I'm going to go on to the security boys in Croke Park to stop them.
Yeah, exactly. Good luck.
Cheers.
Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, because I won't see you later. But not allowed to talk it out.